College leaders everywhere are facing challenging decisions in this modern era.
Have we got a stadium?
Yes.
Have we got a college?
Yes.
Well, we can't support both. Tomorrow we start tearing down the college.
And decisions on the geographical makeup of the rebuilding Pac-12 haven't been easy either.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's how I got to Memphis. New Orleans, New Orleans.
UTSA, anyone?
Anybody going to San Antonio?
How about GCU?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Moraga?
The bells of St. Mary's.
However the geography ultimately looks, it's great to know the Pac-12 is coming back. And as it does, and when it does, the Joe Beaver Show will be along for the ride, striking that hopeful note.
These are the good old days. These are the good old days.
Brace yourselves, amigos.
Now, the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
You know, it's funny because for a bit there, you would say they're not the good old days. You know, they're not. But actually, they can be. Any days can be the good old days. It's just how you look at it. Some people in my life who know me, hi everybody, I'm John Warren, and this is the Joe Beaver Show, an hour show today, but we've got two guests coming up. Alan Thayer in just a couple of minutes from Eugene, and he will join me. I get there's information he has that are some new stuff that I don't even know what it is. The only question I have for Alan is, tell me what you got. And then Angie Machado from BeaverBlitz.com coming up here at the bottom of the hour at 11:30. And we'll talk with Angie about a number of things, coaching search, players, all that. So that's the show. And then your phone calls, of course, most likely your texts, because it's hard for me to answer. Now, you can call during the break and I can line you up. But anyway, yeah, I mean, my older brother loves to call me a curmudgeon. He doesn't know me well enough. That's just not true. I fight for justice. I get mad when things are not right. All that good stuff. But I also live by creeds that I grew up reading about. Some of the great athletes, Bob Pettit, Bob Cousy, Connie Hawkins. And then, of course, you get into the Charles Barkley. I'm reading a book about him right now, actually listening to it because it's not really reading anymore when it's an audio book. But Barkley book, Bird, all these great players in all the different sports. I remember the Jerry Kramer book, reading that in high school. What else? Paper Lion, that was kind of fun. That was about a writer. I don't know. I can't remember if he went undercover with the Detroit Lions or if they knew who he was and he was just doing fall camp with them. But anyway, and most of them, especially the successful ones, if not all of them, and I was raised in this environment in the 70s to, you know, look at everything as an opportunity rather than a failure. I know Mitch Canham has a lot of great quotes when it comes to setbacks and disappointment and all of that. And that's the way I like to live. Okay, fine. You took a hit. Ouch. Like a dog going into the woods to heal and then coming back. Whatever. You come back and you move on. You move forward. I'm very excited about the new Pac-12 coming up next year. I think right now everything stinks. But I'm kind of getting used to a few things, like men's and women's basketball in the West Coast Conference. Okay, yeah. Like Brooks Hatch has said, I'd really like it to be just 1 year, but it's 2 years, and so we're going through it this year. Next year, we won't. So there's things to look forward to. Tonight, Oregon State men's soccer against the heated and hated Washington Huskies at Lorenz Field at 6 o'clock. Haven't gotten any word on if that's a sellout or not. But that's tonight at 6 o'clock. You can find it on ESPN+. Boy, I can't wait for that. Now, I'm taking tomorrow off, so no show tomorrow. Mike's in St. Thomas at the Paradise Jam. Once I looked into it, I go, oh, okay, yes, of course. U.S. Virgin Islands, they're in St. Thomas. They're at the Paradise Jam. I have called two different Paradise Jams. One with women's basketball way back in about 2003 or 2004. I can't remember. And then one with men's basketball 6 or 7 years ago, we went to St. Thomas. In fact, Kim and I were dating at the time, and they didn't bring her, but we paid extra. She paid her own fare just to get there. And a year or two later, we were at I was with men's basketball, and Sean Scheffler and Wayne Tinkle, we were sitting at dinner one night when we had just arrived at our road trip. "Hey, Johnny, whatever happened to that gal you took to St. Thomas with us?" And I said, "Well, I married her." "Oh," and they didn't know. So that was kind of fun. Anyhow, that's where the men are. So I'm taking tomorrow off. We'll be back with you on Monday from the Jack and Jenny Wilborn media room. Although, let me look at this schedule here, because the men's basketball schedule is kind of crazy. And next week, it'll be the same for the women. Ron Callen and the women's team will be at the exact same tournament. I wouldn't be surprised if they're staying in the same hotel, because this week it's the men's tournament, Paradise Jam, which I've been to, the University of St. Thomas. And then the women's the following week. Same tournament, same everything. So let's see. If the men win tomorrow night, they play Evansville, the Aces of Evansville, tomorrow at 4:30. If they win that game, they would play Sunday at 4:30. And then everybody plays on Monday, I believe. If they lose, they would play Saturday at 2. And I don't have the bracket in front of me to tell me the exact times on Monday. There is a game, potential for a game on Monday, that would get in the way of the Joe Beaver Show. So keep an eye on that tournament and find out where. But we'll have it for you right here on Joe. First game against the Aces of Evansville tomorrow. And we'll do that tomorrow at 4:30. I need to take a break, come back with Alan Thayer. He's got some stuff to talk about, and I've got one question as well. So that's coming up next. Angie Machado at the bottom of the hour on 1240 Joe Radio. Okay, I've got Alan Thayer on the line. Hello, everybody. By the way, the text line, let me know. Somebody was trying to call in when I was doing the monologue there, and I just couldn't get to it quick enough, and I had to get Alan on the line anyway, because this is when he can talk. Alan Thayer from Innovative Law Group in Eugene. I didn't expect to have anything, but you have some news on a few things. And then I have one question about something that popped up actually today from ESPN.com. But anyway, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm good. How are you?
Doing very well, and just getting through all of it. This is a big weekend, and then this is a time of year when you have crossover sports and tournaments and things, so it gets very busy. But, yeah, it's going to be a good weekend of competition.
Well, yes. Mike Parker sent me a message this morning. It sounds like he's enjoying the climate of St. Thomas.
80 degrees. He called me right after he did that with you. He called me, and, yeah, 80 degrees, sunshine. It's beautiful there. I've been there 3 times and twice with basketball. It's a nice little break, that's for sure. What do you got today? What's news now as far as lawyer type things when it comes to the Mountain West, the Pac-12, and anything else? I mean, I've got a question for you on a national thing that it's not really a curveball. You'll be able to answer it, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Well, there was a scheduling conference, actually called a case management conference, that was held on Tuesday, just 2 days ago. And there the court meets with the parties. They give them an update where they are. And then the court sets out a schedule for management of the case from today up to trial. And so a trial date has been set. And that is... that is probably the big news. The date that is set for that trial is July 6, 2027. So that's a year and a half from now.
Wow. And this is, remind everybody what this trial is.
Oh, this is a good point. Thank you. This is in the Pac-12's lawsuit against the Mountain West over poaching penalties. Mm. The Pac-12's argument is that... under antitrust laws, the poaching penalty provisions in the scheduling agreement that Pac-12 entered with the Mountain West to provide 12 games last football season, not the one we're currently in, but a year ago, 6 games for Oregon State and 6 games for Washington State.
Okay, Alan, when things like this happen, where life has to go on, but there's a lot of dollars at stake. What happens with those dollars? In other words, obviously the litigation holds up any payments that are due, right? Until there's an answer on it. So will they sweep July, get into the new league and start doing what they're doing and hold off on any of the money issues until 2027 when this is resolved?
That's the deal.
Okay. Okay. And you think the Pac-12 has a good case here?
Oh, I think they have a very good case. And in fact, I think they have a case for a case they haven't even asserted yet.
Which is?
So the Pac-12's lawsuit was to seek an order from the court that the poaching penalty provision of the contract are unenforceable. But when the Pac-12 or Oregon State, Washington State went to the Mountain West looking for some games, the Mountain West charged the snot out of the Pac-12 for those games.
Right.
As you know, normally to get a team to come to Reser Stadium and play a football game, Oregon State will usually pay about $500,000 to make that happen. That's the going rate for a Mountain West school coming to coming to Oregon State or Washington State.
I'm sorry, say that one more time. How much was the money? I missed the money part.
Well, the going rate is $500,000.
Okay.
And then when Oregon State goes to some other school stadium, plays an away game, if it's a non-conference game, then Oregon State is usually paid money.
Sure.
Here's what the Mountain West required in order for Oregon State and Washington State to have some games so they could continue the football program. They charged them essentially $2 million a game, whether the game was a home game or an away game.
Well, that's utterly ridiculous. They're just trying to get back at the league. Clearly that's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me go back here. I did a back of the napkin analysis of what that could be, and antitrust cases, damage claims are tripled. So the antitrust damages under those agreements, probably somewhere between $18 million and $24 million. When they're tripled, that gets up to $54 million or to $72 million that the Mountain West may owe the Pac-12. Now, we've talked about this before. The Pac-12, I thought, was very gracious when they filed their complaint. They said, we're only going to focus on the poaching penalties. And they haven't raised this other issue. But they could.
Yeah. Yeah. If it doesn't look good on the poaching issue, they could.
No. And if Oregon State wins on the poaching issue, then the same arguments would play on the antitrust damage issue if the Pac-12 decides to assert that.
You think they will?
Well, they have an opportunity to. So the scheduling order entered the court gives the parties up to March 31st of next year, this coming March, to file a motion to amend their pleadings.
Okay.
And so March 31st is one date that folks should pay attention to.
How much will this matter? How much will winning or losing matter? Are we at a place now where it's just finishing up an earlier squabble? I know that it matters to the Mountain West. If they lose a ton of money. And they might even lose a couple of teams. And they might even collapse if they lost the big money. For the Pac-12, though, how big of a deal is it? Really, for either side.
Well, what's $55 million, which is the total of the poaching penalties?
Yeah.
What is $55 million worth to the Pac-12? I would say that is actually substantial.
Yeah. Yeah, because even though they've kind of triaged the early damage, they need that money, and they can't lose it. Did they end up having to pay that $1 million or $2 million prior to all of this? Have they paid that, and they've just decided not to go retroactively and say, hey, that was way too much?
Well, they did pay it, wow. I believe.
Wow.
And but they can claw it. I think they can claw it back if they want. Now, if they were to amend their complaint to do that, that adds significant leverage against the Mountain West in settlement negotiations.
Are you surprised the Mountain West let this go this far?
I was, but then I was given a copy of the Mountain West media rights agreement with its members, and the incentive payments set out in that agreement. And the Mountain West owes UNLV and Air Force Academy $17 million on July 1, that's coming up, July 1, 2026, which is 1 year before the trial is scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
They then owe $3 million in incentive payments to the University of Hawaii and $11 million in incentive payments to the other members of the conference.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the money for that comes from the poaching penalties and from the exit fees from the Pac-12 schools that are leaving to join, the Mountain West schools that are leaving to join the Pac-12.
So if they lose all this, they don't have the money to pay the promises made to UNLV and I don't know who else to say, hey, don't go to the Pac-12. We'll give you a whole bunch of money. And UNLV, needing money, said okay, but it might not be there.
It might not be there.
And UNLV might not have another invitation. They may have hurt themselves with that decision.
They may, or they may be in play again.
True. True. Interesting. All right. I have a quick question for you on something else. Saw this article this morning. The College Sports Commission, the new enforcement agency of college sports, has asked all schools under its purview to agree to waive their right to challenge future punishments in court as part of an agreement that would give the agency significant power to investigate and punish rule breakers in the era of nil deals and direct athlete payments. The CSC, which launched in July, sent a 10-page membership agreement to all Power Conference schools on Wednesday, asking them to sign it in the next 2 weeks. The terms of the agreement are designed to close loopholes that have made it difficult for the NCAA and CSC to enforce rules established by the recent House settlement that dictates how college athletes can be paid. Now, it goes on with a lot more, but I'll just stop right there and ask you, just on its surface, it sounds to me that it's ridiculous that anybody would ever sign something saying, I will not go after you. In the world of jurisprudence, wouldn't that be ridiculous to sign something saying you will not go after someone? Because it gives them carte blanche then to backstab you.
Yeah. You know, I think it depends upon the perspective of the school. So if your point of view is that universities ought to be following these rules and we need to have the tools to make them follow the rules, then maybe you say, yes, I will sign signs.
Mm-hmm.
But what you don't want to do, and I guess suppose there was a school in the SEC that says, hell no, we're not going to sign that.
Uh-huh.
And everyone goes, well, they don't want to sign that because they're going to want to cheat. And if they're going to be cheating, I don't want to be a disadvantage compared to them. And so I won't sign it either.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I see that as an all or nothing deal.
Yeah, it looks like it is. It goes on. I don't know why they're starting just with Power Four, but it's just all about kind of what we're dealing with. I don't even know if that's the College Sports Commission. Is that the same thing as the Deloitte Go Now thing or whatever?
Well, Deloitte Go Now, I believe, reports to the College Sports Commission.
Ah, got it. Got it. Yeah.
And we actually know somebody who is a member of the College Sports Commission.
Who might that be?
Scott Barnes. Scott Barnes is sitting on that commission along with people from each of the Power Four conferences.
Boy, I'm really glad to know that we get to be represented, we being the smaller schools. That's huge. That's huge.
And then there is a subcommittee that deals with NIL enforcement and NIL, what is that, NIL Go?
Yeah.
And Scott is on that subcommittee as well.
Well, let's hope he stays on these committees because we need representation. There's no doubt, especially where things have gone and where they could go. I have to let you go because I got Angie coming up. Any last thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say it is very, very important for us that Scott is on those committees.
Who's your hope for a new coach? Do you have one?
Oh, you know, I find it very interesting and fascinating to consider the possibilities with each candidate that's presented. But, you know, I pretend to know legal stuff. I don't pretend to know how to pick the right coach and who that might be.
I don't think anybody does in this day and age. I don't think anybody does at all. Hey, thank you very much, Alan Thayer from Innovative Law Group in Eugene. Always great to talk with you. And any new stuff, just give us a call. We'll get you on right away.
All right. Good talking with you, John.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Alan. That's Alan Thayer, Innovative Law Group in Eugene. Take a quick time out and come back with Angie Machado from BeaverBlitz.com on Joe Radio.
Pure attitude. 1240 Joe Radio.
Okay, there we go. Welcome back here to the Joe Beaver Show. We never really left because we heard from all of our fine sponsors. Anyway, I am John Warren flying solo today. We'll go for the remainder of this hour and then come back with you strong on Monday. Unless there's a basketball game and it's a convoluted tournament thing on wins and losses. So we don't know. Just keep an eye on the Beaver schedule as they work through the Paradise Jam holiday tournament in St. Thomas. And boy, Angie, wouldn't that be nice to be in St. Thomas this time of year? I've been there this time of year. It's pretty good.
Is it? I wouldn't be complaining right now. How did you not get to go? And Mike went in your place.
I know. Almost every single time. Here's how. Because of the football bye week, which is crazy, to the placement of that bye week.
Oh, yeah. That worked out well for Mike.
It sure did. And if it didn't, I would have been on those trips. So, yeah. It usually is me. So I do get to have the joys of those types of things. But again, sometimes it's hard to be away from family during the holidays. And I've been with the Beaver basketball team, men or women, gosh, over the last 25 years, maybe 15 times at least. Missed a lot
nice.
Of Thanksgiving.
Well, you're getting some travel.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So BeaverBlitz.com. I know you've got a special, or do you have a special going on right now? And are you getting ready for a special for the holidays?
Yeah, Black Friday is always a big one, so that we haven't been told what that is yet, but it's usually a pretty good one. So watch that. It's usually in the 50% to 75% off range. So it's a really good one if you're wanting to jump into Beaver Blitz. And goodness, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
We're going to have so much stuff in the next couple months with this coaching search, and then signing day in a couple weeks. But that leads right into transfer portal and February signing day, which will be bigger this year for Oregon State with the new coaching staff. And goodness gracious, John, then it leads right into, basketball's overlapping, and then it goes right into baseball. So
yep.
December and January are going to be very, very busy at Beaver Blitz.
Yeah, it really never ends, and it starts right now. All right, with that, let's talk about what do you know about the coaching search? And I don't want to be that generic. I'll get specific here. Do you agree with Canzano on who he had said would be interviewing this week, at least three people that he said would, Vegan from Montana State, Christ, and I can't remember the third one.
Will Stein and Jamarcus Shepherd.
Jamarcus Shepherd. Now, that what you just said, though, I didn't know about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, John actually has a good handle. In fact, I kind of laughed that John and I must have very similar contacts.
Yeah.
And sources, because his list and my list were very, very similar. Interviews are taking place this week, and yes, those are the names. Will Stein from Oregon, I was told, has interviewed, so that might be a name. We had that Tuesday morning on Blitz, and I think we were the first to have that one, and some outlets still haven't had that one, but I have heard he has interviewed. I do, on the same line, I know Tosh Lupoi is interested in the job as well. I just don't know if he is on the interview list.
What about the others, the other two in vegan and I'm drawing a blank now again, Wisconsin.
Shepherd.
Chris.
Yeah. I mean, those two give you the kind of already been a head coach. You know, Chris has been out of the game for, you know, several years, and the college game has changed a lot, not the game necessarily, but just, you know, NIL and the whole enterprise of it. So, you know, that I'm sure that's a Coach Riley, you know, that's, he's on the committee, and I'm sure that is one that he's been pushing for. And I've heard, you know, a lot of really good things about Jamarcus Shepherd at Bama too. So he's one I'm keeping a close eye on.
Yeah.
Well.
We got a text yesterday from a listener who claims to, you know, really not be in the know. I don't know what his contacts are, but be in the know about Shepherd, saying that he would make a great CEO and that maybe he could bring some players from Alabama. I'm not so sure players from Alabama want to come to Oregon State, but let's just say he can. Have you heard anything along those lines? We've heard nothing but great things about Shepherd as far as attitude, youthful experience, all kinds of stuff, even some inside information from people who actually have worked with him and say this guy would be fantastic. Have you heard anything along those lines where he could be a good CEO? Because, as I said a year or two ago, it's got to be a good CEO. They have to manage everything. They're stepping back from actual coaching. They're stepping back. Trent Bray was no longer the defensive coordinator with Keith Hayward here, stepping back. And we all saw how it happened. So,
yeah.
There's a new criteria, it seems, in this day and age. You almost have to be a GM, a general manager, if your school doesn't have one.
Yeah, and I think that's the big question. And, you know, the things we've heard about Shepherd, you know, Kim Grinolds, he's the publisher and owner of Dog Man up at University of Washington. He's one of my 24/7 sister sites up there. He actually jumped in the lodge at Beaver Blitz yesterday. He's like, Angie didn't even ask me to do this, but I've done this since 1997. And Jamarcus Shepherd is one of my favorite assistant coaches I've ever covered. Just energy and would get along with everybody. He'd make an amazing head coach. My biggest question with that is, and since I'm not in the interviews, is who he would bring in as an offensive and defensive coordinator. Because, mm-hmm. like you said, you know, I think that was to Coach Bray's detriment, was the youthful offensive and defensive coordinators he brought in. So, you know, when you have a whole bunch of first timers, things can go sideways. So I hope that if Jamarcus Shepherd gets a job, he has some experienced guys he's got lined up ready to be his OC in DC that can help let him then be the CEO.
Have you noticed in the conversations in the lodge, have you picked up on anything where it comes to criteria? Because really, that's a question that hasn't really been answered by anybody. I've thrown it out there, and even listeners won't really try to take that on. What would be the right criteria in this day and age with portal and transfer and money for a head coach? Because I don't think it's the same as it was even 10 years ago.
No, and I think that's the knock on Chris, is that, you know, he's been out of this for a while, and it has changed. I would say in the past like 5 years, it's changed dramatically. So yeah, there's tons of discussion. I don't think you look at any candidate, you know, right now and say that's a slam dunk. There is a slam dunk. This is a no brainer. Every single candidate has maybe something that you kind of like, okay, this is kind of their one. So Chris, he's been a head coach before and can build a program, but he hasn't done it in the new era of college football. A Jamarcus Shepherd or a Will Stein, they're amazing coaches, have all those kind of qualities, the energy, the youth, and have been around the whole NIL market, understand it, but then they've never been the CEO and run the program. So I think with every candidate, you kind of have some, you know, pluses and minuses with all of them. And so I think there's both. And I interviewed Scott Barnes, oh gosh, probably 6-7 weeks ago, kind of after Trent Bray was let go. And, you know, he talked a lot about, I've always hired coordinators. You know, I've always hired, whether it was Jonathan Smith, but I don't know if that's the direction he's going now. I don't know if he feels like he's been bitten by doing that and wants to go with someone more experienced. It's interesting. And it's been very close. They've kept things pretty quiet. I think the search firm has done, or the DHR search firm has kind of did all the initial stuff. And now the interviews are taking place. We are kind of hearing little bits and pieces, a little more bits and pieces. But it's going to be an interesting, you know, end of the day, this hire is Barnes's legacy.
So the firm finds people, potentials, but then you've got the committee that, you know, Brandon Cooks and several other people on that committee, Mike Riley. How involved are they in the interview process? Or were they just, okay, here's the list of who we got. What do you think of these? And then Barnes goes forward by himself.
Well, and that's, we keep hearing in conflicting reports. So I hope that now that the way I understand it is the search firm goes out and they're able to identify candidates. You know, there are kind of decorum and rules that athletic directors kind of adhere to of not, you know, soliciting active coaches. You know, so there's some, what they call back channels. So that's where your search firm can reach out to agents and the such. So they can compile the list. I hope Barnes utilizes the committee and lets them in on the interviews and voice their opinions. I've heard that they haven't been as involved as some of the committee had hoped they would be. So I'm hoping that's changed and that they are getting a say. Obviously this is Barnes's hire, but you know, I guess in the perfect world, you want the committee to agree and one candidate just stand out above the rest and they all can kind of sign off on it and it's a unanimous or nearly unanimous. It makes everything a lot easier than if, you know, two people want this guy and two people want that guy.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping. But it's been kind of quiet. I work the phones. I've done this 20 years now, have contacts all over the country, and we all kind of hear little different things, whether it's from agents or inside, you know, coaches and different people around the country. So what you hear are little bits and little nuggets, and you kind of piece them together, and you have to decide, okay, decipher, was this just an agent trying to get his coach's name out there to draw attention? Is this more of a play just to leverage more money where they're at? Is this a legitimate interest? So there's a lot of sifting through, and we don't just post every little tidbit we find out.
I'll tell you one thing that's different than years past is there is no clear-cut slam dunk. There just isn't. I personally would love Rick Neuheisel, but you know, that was that serious when he said what he said, or was he just in jest?
Oh, who knows? He likes to talk, so he has a pretty good gig right now with CBS Sports. So. You know, but sometimes those coaches want to get back in. Again, though, he's been out of the game for quite a while. It's changed a lot since he was a coach.
What do you know, Angie Machado, BeaverBlitz.com, joining me here for just a couple more minutes. What do you know about potential departures once the season is over? I heard, but again, you never know. Where'd you hear that? That like upwards of 50 guys would be taken off.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I could see that. I mean, that's coaching changes. I mean, even without a coaching change, you see major roster turnover, it seems, every year. With a coaching change, there's going to be, you know, I think I don't have any numbers. I haven't heard because I think if I was counseling the players, they need to wait to see who's hired and where they fit. And if, you know, they need to sit down and talk with that coach, not just make a rash decision when there's not even a hire named yet. So, but no, if you're a Beaver fan, it's going to be bumpy. You're going to hear a lot of names hitting the portal, but then you're going to hear, like I said, December, February, and January, February are going to be busy because the portal opens. It'll open for departures 5 days after the new coach is hired. So December will be busy with departures. But then when the portal opens again in January, like I said, January is going to be a very, very busy with both high school and transfers. High school recruiting.
When is high school signing day?
Well, the early signing period is actually December 3rd through 5th. So we're 2 weeks away from that. I've been, you know, talking with several of the current commits that are still committed. I do expect a couple of them to still sign with Oregon State early, just because they love Oregon State regardless. Some will wait. Some are still being recruited by other programs. Some will wait that are still committed and you know, find out who is hired, where they fit in that system. But then the next then would be that first Wednesday in February. So I expect that to be a pretty busy one. In the past, you know, it's been kind of more of a, the February signing day has been more of your preferred walk-ons and maybe a few little missing pieces. This February, I expect it to be a lot busier. And then, like I said, that whole month of January with Portal, busy.
How much can a new coach coming in scramble to scoop up a bunch of high school kids that they had no contact with or any idea? I mean, I would assume that if you got hired as a football coach in December, you're going to basically rebuild the first year from the portal.
It's going to be heavily portal. Absolutely. But you know, if they've been in coaching, they have contacts and, you know, if someone like Shepherd or Stein, the guys that they've been recruiting at Bama or Oregon might not be the same guys that they'd be recruiting at Oregon State, but they have connections. You know, it's not like they're coming into this blind. They have, you know, high school connections for, you know, guys that maybe are getting overlooked or that they could reach out to. But it will be heavily portal and JUCO.
All right. I'm out of questions. Thanks. I mean,
you're done. I'm out. Tapping out.
Well, it's like, okay, all right. There's so many different angles you could look at this. I did have a question about the players that you know, the players on this current team. They love Trent Bray, and we all do, obviously. But they're like mad that he got fired. Do they not know that he was the leader of something that wasn't working? And I know kids are going to want what they want, but at the same time, they have to realize it wasn't working.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, you got to remember, these are also 18 to 22, 23-year-olds.
Yeah.
So they're still, I mean, that was their world. Coach Bray is who brought them in. They love him. And when he's fired, then that's that uncertainty, right? That's back to, you know, your favorite boss getting fired,
right.
You know, and
right.
You had a great relationship. There's that unknown, and they're learning. I mean, it's a life lesson that they're going to take with them the rest of their life because we've all been there. But I think it's tough for them.
You got it. Angie, thanks for coming on with us. Great stuff. We'll check in with you later on because I think things are going to really get going after the Washington State game.
Absolutely. It'll get busy.
All
thanks,
right.
John.
Thanks, Angie. All right, there you go. Angie Machado from BeaverBlitz.com on all things coaching and recruiting and players and retainment and all that good stuff. Okay, quick break. Come back after this on 1240 Joe Radio. Okay, no, it's not going to happen. All right, welcome back. I got to get another short break in after this. Trying to pack in two hours into one full hour. I was just looking at this tournament for the Beaver basketball team. Shane from Corvallis texted in. Shane, yes, all the games for Oregon State men's basketball will be on 1240 Joe Radio starting tomorrow at 4:30, tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 for a 5 o'clock tip-off against the Evansville Aces. The other two teams in the Beaver side of the bracket are Iona and Akron. Iona and Akron. On the top half of the tournament, where the Beavers could face one of these four teams if they were to make the championship or the consolation finals, Green Bay and Yale will play each other. University of Green Bay and Yale. And UMass and Charleston will play each other. They're on the upper half of the bracket. You would face them on either side's championship game. So if the Beavers win tomorrow, they would play Saturday at 5 p.m., 4:30 airtime, Saturday. If the Beavers lose tomorrow, they would play. I take that back. If they win tomorrow, they play Sunday at 5. If they lose tomorrow, they would play Saturday at 2. Now, I'm not going to give you the whole scenarios, but there are two scenarios. Let's see, win that, lose that. There are two scenarios that would have them playing in the space where is the Joe Beaver show. So I'm going to put men's basketball on over the Monday presser and play back the Monday presser on Tuesday. That's what we'll do if those two scenarios are reached. And as I understand it, those two scenarios only come through the loser's bracket. So if the Beavers keep winning, not a problem. If they lose, two different scenarios, they would be playing either Monday morning or Monday midday, which both of them would be right over the top of the Joe Beaver Show. All right? Does that make sense? I'll be gone tomorrow, back on Monday with Brooks Hatch. And if there is no Joe Beaver Show Monday, then for sure we'll have a two-hour show on Tuesday and Wednesday. Mike's back on Wednesday. And get into the weekend of Thanksgiving with, again, a full 2 hours. So two different scenarios that would knock out the Beavers for Monday's show, but that has to happen in the loser's bracket. Just take care of business and win, baby, win. Okay, let me sneak this last break in and then come back and wrap it up with a few more texts here on the University Honda text line and the Kellenberger Appliances. No, that's the morning show. The Downward Dog phone line, 497-5356 on 1240 Joe Radio. All right, CVB has written in on the text line and sent me an article that's really good. And it wraps up our conversation, sort of, that we've been having these last couple of days about reseating and things like that. LSU is adding field-level premium seating. I'm surprised they don't already have this, but anyway, they're adding premium seating where the bullpen at Box Stadium currently sits. The home and visiting team bullpens are being relocated in a project that will be completed this fall. They'll have seats and loge boxes. In fact, 36 four-person loges with individual seats on each side. Each loge will feature in-seat food, beverage service, as well as built-in ice chest to keep beverages cold. LSU's new loge boxes are being sold on three-year deals. Each box includes four seats and costs $9,400 per season. Well, you split that four ways and you've got a little over $2,000 per person. I can see that. Some people would have that. A price tag that includes donations to the Tiger Athletic Foundation. 16 individual seats are also available, minimum purchase of two seats, down the first baseline, costing $2,200 per seat for the season. Since this is college sports, priority is given to buyers based on their philanthropic donations. So they also have the high rollers who donate a whole lot of money are first in line. All right, well, that's what the Beavers are doing. And I'm sure that schools across the country are all doing that. So I don't know. I don't really know what to say on that. You know how I feel about it. I don't like the idea of getting your seats taken away by someone who gave more money somewhere else. But it isn't an argument I'm going to die. It's not a hill I'm going to die on. Absolutely. I get it. I totally understand it. I don't like it. I'm not affected by it because I don't have season tickets and I'm not being displaced, but I think a lot of people are. And again, I'm not going to die on it. It's just an interesting topic for discussion. So yes, and I'm not surprised. I already knew this, that other schools around the country are doing quite the same thing. And at Oregon State, it was done at Reser Stadium and at Gill Coliseum for seats as well. So thanks for that, CVB, on the text line. We're just basically wrapping up the show now. Have a great weekend, and I'll be with you on Monday. Hopefully, if the Beavers can stay in the winner's bracket of this tournament, the Paradise Jam in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. I have been there twice, once with women's basketball and once with the men. And, oh, it is fantastic. There's some really good basketball, too. You know, they bring in teams, good, bad, whatever, from all over the country. I think the Beavers bracket in this particular tournament is more mid-major type schools, Yale and Akron and a few like that. So, not so much on the Power 5 level, but I have seen the Power 5 level for this tournament. The women will play next week at the same venue, same time. So it's a lot of fun if you ever get a chance to know ahead of time that they're going there and save money and go. In the two times I've gone with Oregon State men's and women's, there have been Beaver fans that have been part of the trip on their own, not with the team or anything. Okay, have a great weekend, everybody. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Joe Beaver Show. We've gotten into some really spirited conversations. Take care.